Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we are learning Masechet Megillah. We find ourselves on Daf Chaf Dalet Amud Bet, that's 24b, and we're right in the middle of the page, the second wide line at the Mishnah. This series of recordings is a joint project of the OU Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. Okay, in our previous sections that we've been learning, we were discussing first Megillah reading and then Torah reading, and leading the davening. So I think the reason for this Mishnah being here is similarly. It's another part of the service, which is the duchening, or as it's called here, nesiat kapayim, the raising up of the hands, in which the Kohanim bless the congregation. And this was a portion of the service both in the temple times, but also in the land of Israel, certainly, and even to this day, it is still done every day that the Kohanim, at the end of the repetition of the Amidah, bless the congregation. In the diaspora, it's done according to the Sfardim. They still do it every day. Ashkenazim only do it on special days like festivals. So in our particular case, we're discussing Kohanim who are not supposed to duchen because there are specific things that are wrong with them. So our Mishnah begins. Kohen sheyesh biyadav mumin, a Kohen that has on his hands blemishes. These must be some kind of visual scars or wounds or other kinds of visual imperfections. Lo yisa et kapav. He should not raise up his hands. In other words, he should not bless the congregation. Rabbi Yehuda says, and he adds on to the prohibition, af mi shehayu yadav tzvuot satis, even one whose hands are colored with a satis dye, and there's some dispute about the exact girsa here. Some people read it asatis or add an additional word like poa or kotza. And it probably means a red dye according to most opinions, but there's one opinion that says it's a blue dye. But in other words, his hands are stained a certain color. Lo yisad kapav, he should not lift up his hands. Mipnei she'am mistaklin bo, because the people will look at him. Instead of doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is receiving the bracha, they'll be looking at their hands because there's something unusual about them. There are two explanations of what the problem is here. One explanation is given by Rashi, who gives a sort of the more mystical explanation, which is when the Kohanim raise up their hands to bless the congregation, they are channeling the blessing of Hashem. And it's as if Hashem is putting the blessing through their outstretched fingers into the congregation. And by looking at the Kohanim's hands, it's a sort of arrogance or impropriety of trying to, so to speak, see God or look at God as he is blessing them. So you're not really supposed to look at their hands. And there is a Gemara that says, almost brings a curse on someone who looks at the Kohanim's hands when they are blessing the people and says that that person's eye should be struck. So it's improper to stare at the Kohanim's hands. So a Kohen who's going to lead people to look at their hands should not duchen. Another way of looking at it is a little different but similar in nature, in the sense that by causing the people to look at their hands because they are colored or bleeding or imperfect in whatever way, people will not be focusing on the blessing. They'll not have the proper kavanah, so it creates what's called a hesach hadat. It distracts them from what they're supposed to be doing. Okay, so the Gemara is going to discuss the Mishnah now. The first couple words of the Gemara are taken out by a lot of different girsas. It depends, but many of the Rishonim remove these words. So the words Tana, Mumin She'amru Bifanav Yadav Viraglav. Now we have a teaching that these are imperfections on his face, his hands, and his legs, are removed. All those words are, I put them in parentheses. We're going to discuss this issue in a couple of lines. So the proper girsa, I believe, should start with Amar Rabbi Yeshua at the end of the line. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. This is now we're on the fifth line in the wide lines. Yadav bo hakaniot lo yisad kapav. This is a new teaching. If his hands are spotted or stained, I don't think this means freckled. I think it means a little more than that. But if there are clear spots on them, he also should not duchen for presumably the same reasons that they are unusual enough that people will look at them. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a similar braita that teaches the same. Yadav bo hakariot lo yisad kapav. If he has spotted hands, he should not lift up his hands to bless the people. Akumot, Rashi interprets akumot, which means bent, as clenched, meaning he cannot unclench his hands. Akushot, and this would mean rigid, he cannot close his hands. Lo yisad kapav. So here, his hands are not don't have anything on them, but they don't look like normal hands because he can't move them in the way that normal hands move. For a similar reason, he also should not duchen. Now we have a slightly different teaching, which I think is included here not only because it's a similar topic of Kohanim that should not duchen, but also because it's in this Braita that we're quoting. Amar Rav Asi, Rav Asi said, Chefani ubeishani lo yisat kapav. Now these are referring to places where people come from. A chefani is a person from Chefa or Haifa. And a beishani is a person who comes from Beit She'an. So these are some northern areas in Israel. And apparently, as explained later on in the Gemara and by Rashi here, they had a slightly different dialect. They pronounced Hebrew differently. So if a person from Haifa or Beit She'an went to a more southern place in Israel, they would sound differently than the other Kohanim. And therefore they should not duchen because they would pronounce it in a different dialect. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a similar teaching in a Braita. Ein moridin lifnei ateva. You should not bring down before the ark. In other words, you shouldn't have someone lead the service. They would go down. The front of the shul was kind of like in a decline, and you would stand below the bima and in front of the amud, in front of the ark. So ein moridin lifnei ateva. We don't bring down to before the ark to lead the congregation. Lo anshei Beit She'an ve'lo anshei Beit Chifa, not people from Beit She'an or Haifa. Ve'lo anshei Tivonin, and not people from Tivon, which is another place. Mipnei shekorin la'alafin ayinin, because when they say words that have an aleph in them, alafin is just the plural of aleph, they instead say ayin. Ula ayin alafin, and they say ayin aleph. In other words, they don't distinguish the way that we do between an aleph and an ayin. Now, presumably, and the Yemenites still do this, but most of us don't, the aleph is less of a glottal sound than the ayin. The ayin is pronounced more like an ayin, and the aleph is more closer, more towards the front of the mouth. And these people were not careful to distinguish between them. So Rashi gives an example that some of their words could possibly be misunderstood to be the wrong way. So when instead of saying Ya'er Hashem panav elecha, may Hashem shine His face on you, you might say Ya'er elecha or something like that. It would sound like Hashem should pour down His fury upon us. That it sounds like a different word, and because their words could be misinterpreted, they should not duchen. Either because it would sound that way to the congregation, or just because it could be interpreted that way, and we don't want to have that misinterpretation even be possible. Amar le Rabbi Chiya le Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi. This is a story of one time Rabbi Chiya said to Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi, Il male ata Levi, if you were a Levi, pasulata min ha-duchan, you would not be permitted to go up to the duchen in the Beit HaMikdash. We say duchening is for Kohanim, but here the Levium would mount a platform and they would sing the Shir Shel Yom, the song of the day. So he says, if you were a Levi in the Beit HaMikdash, you would not be allowed to go sing with the other Levium, mishum da'ave kolcha, because your voice is very thick. Now, I don't know if he means that he had a terrible singing voice or that it was especially deep or gravelly or there was something else wrong with it, but it stood out from all the other voices. And he said, because your voice stands out from all the other voices, you would not be allowed to sing with all the other Levium. So I think he was very insulted by this. Like I think it was meant to be an insult. Ata amar le le'avuha. So he went home and he told his father what Rabbi Chiya had said to him. Amar le, his father said back to him, Zil emale, go tell him, you go tell Rabbi Chiya this. Kishata magia etzel v'chikiti l'ashem, when you get to the pasuk, which is in Yeshayahu, presumably he's reading the Haftorah or something, whatever it is that he's doing, you'll get to v'chikiti l'ashem, and I will wait for Hashem. Lo nimtzeit mecharef u'megadef, would you not be considered to be an apostate, one who is, profaning the name of God? And Rashi explains that Rabbi Chiya did not distinguish between his chetz and his heis. So we distinguish between cha and ha, and perhaps he had some kind of a lisp or it was a dialect that he did not clearly distinguish between his chetz and his heis. So he would have said something more that sounded like v'hikiti l'ashem, and I will strike God, which sounds like a blasphemous thing to say. So he said, in other words, you're calling the kettle black, the pot calling the kettle black. You're telling my son that he can't duchen because he has a nice voice, and you wouldn't be able to either because of your lisp. You would sometimes mispronounce a word in a way that might seem blasphemous. In any way, We continue on with the next teaching. Amar Rav Huna, Zav Ligan Lo Yisad Kapav. Another thing that might be wrong with a Kohen is that he's a Zav Ligan. Now Rashi says this means that he has watery eyes. In other words, his eyes are constantly tearing, and so they're running all the time. Maybe he's always dabbing at them. So because of his teary eyes, people will look at him. So although it's not his hands, now we're dealing with his face. It's another exposed part of his body. Because his eyes are tearing all the time, he'll distract the people and they'll look at his face. There are two ways of looking at it, though. The one girsa would be zalgan, which would mean that the tears were running down his face. Zavlagan could be interpreted as he has goop coming out of his eyes. So more like mucusy or something else. But in any case, something is coming out of his eyes, and he also should not dochen. However, the Gemara brings a question, because it seems like there was a case where such a person did dochen. V'ha ha-hu, there was a certain guy, Dahava b'shibabutei de Rav Huna, who was in the neighborhood of Rav Huna, v'hava paris yadei, and he stretched out his hands to do the blessing of the Kohanim. And he was a Zavlagan, apparently. That's the story. So why, and if he wasn't allowed to do it, Rav Huna would have told him that he wasn't allowed to. So why was he allowed to do it? So the Gemara explains, Hahu dash bi'iro hava. He was well known in his city. They were used to him already, meaning it's true that his eyes were running, but because he duchened every day, everybody got used to it, and it wasn't something that stood out anymore, and people didn't look at him. Tanya Nami Hachi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Zavlagan lo yisad kapav, a person whose eyes are running should not give the blessing. Vim hayadash bi'iro mutar, but if he is regular in his city, then it is permitted. So in other words, the problem here is only when it's very unusual and it will distract people. So many of the Rishonim, not all, think that this would apply as well to the spotted hands, to the hands that are stained with satis, to a person whose hands were clenched. If they are living in a town where everybody knows everybody else and everybody knows that their hands are always clenched or always spotted, once people get used to it, it's not a problem anymore. It's only when they go places that are not their hometown. If they're visitors in a certain place, maybe they're not allowed to duchen because they'll stand out. Or maybe if there's a lot of new people that come to their town all the time, they would stand out. But if they're well known to everyone who's there, it seems like it is okay. And I think the same thing might apply to the Beit She'an and Haifa people. In Beit She'an and Haifa, everybody speaks that way, so they can duchen there perfectly well. It's only when they visit other cities where the pronunciation is different that it becomes a problem. Okay, we continue on in the Gemara. The next section in the Mishnah deals with blind people. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Suma be'achat me'enav, a blind person in one of his eyes, lo yisad kapav, also should not get up to bless the congregation. I think that the assumption here is that by being blind in one eye, he will attract attention. Maybe he's wearing an eye patch, or it becomes obvious to people in some way, but it will be distracting in the same way as a person who's mispronouncing words or has spotted hands would be distracting. V'ha ha'hu da'havi b'shibibuta d'Rabbi Yochanan da'havi paris yadei. But there was a certain guy who was blind in one eye in the neighborhood of Rabbi Yochanan, and he did do the Kohanim blessing, and Rabbi Yochanan didn't stop him. So why was he allowed to do it if the law is that a person who's blind in one eye cannot duchen? And the answer was, Ahu dash bi'iro hava, the same answer. He was well known in his city. Everybody was used to him already. Tanya na mihachi, we have a similar teaching in a braita. Suma bi'achat me'enav lo yisad kapav, v'imaya dash bi'iro mutar. A person who's blind in one eye should not give the Kohanim blessing, and if he is known in his city, then it is permitted. That brings us to the two dots. We're just going to finish up the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Misha hayu yadav tzvuot lo yisad kapav. Rabbi Yehuda adds on and says that if his hands are colored, that he should not give the blessing of the Kohanim. So the Gemara says, Tana, we have a teaching, Im rov anshei ha'ir melachtan bekach mutar. If the majority of the people in that city have their work in something that causes your hands to be stained, then it's permitted. So there are various kinds of laborers, like dyeing or tanning, that might cause your hands to become spotted or discolored. And if that's common in your town, then it would be permitted for them. It's a similar idea, that as long as it's not very unusual and it won't cause the congregation to be distracted, it seems like it's okay. There is some discussion about whether or not this applies halacha lamaisa, because some of these halachot could be only referring to a time when the Beit HaMikdash was standing. So maybe it's referring to duchening in the Beit HaMikdash, but it wouldn't apply outside the Beit HaMikdash. Or maybe it only applied even outside the Beit HaMikdash, but only at a time when there was a Beit HaMikdash. And since the duchening that we do now is only zecher lamikdash, perhaps it wouldn't apply. And there's discussion in the halacha and the Rishonim about those topics and how they should become the halacha as we practice them. Okay, we're at the Mishnah that is 2, 4, 6, 8 lines from the bottom. Continuing on with synagogue issues. Ha'omer, one who says, Eini over lifnei ateva bitzvuin. A certain person is asked to lead the congregation in prayer, and he says, I will not over lifnei ateva, I will not go in front of the ark to lead the congregation, bitzvuin, in colored garments. Right? I won't do it in colored garments, only in white garments. I'll only lead the congregation if I can do it dressed in white. Af bilvanim lo yavor. So then we don't let him do it. If he has this this requirement, we don't allow him to be the shliach tzibur, the leader, and we say even if we let him wear white, we don't let him do it. Or even if he happens to be wearing white, or someone else is wearing white, we don't let him. If he has this hakpada, we don't allow him to lead. Similarly, if he says besandala niover, I won't lead the congregation if I have to wear shoes, only if I'm barefoot, af yachef lo yavor, then we don't let him be the shliach tzibur, even if he is barefoot. Or even if we allow other barefoot people, we don't allow this guy, because there's something wrong about his request. Now, we're not exactly sure what's wrong with his request. It seems to be, or one possibility is that there's something suspicious about this guy. Maybe he's a heretic or a... belongs to another sect, and he has these rules about davening because he has heretical views, and so he is following the practices of the heretics by saying, I can only wear white when I daven, or I can only be barefoot, and we don't want to have that in our shul, and we don't want to have someone who has those views leading the congregation. Another possibility is that what he's doing wrong is that he thinks he's like a Kohen. I think this is instead, I saw this in the name of the Chatam Sofer, that he thinks he's like a Kohen. In the Beit HaMikdash, a Kohen wore white clothing and they went barefoot so that there was no, chatzitza, there was no impediment between the floor and their skin of their feet. They had to be connected to the floor of the Beit HaMikdash. And so this guy thinks that he also has to wear white and be barefoot because he's a Kohen. And we don't allow someone to mimic the exact functioning of the Beit HaMikdash. So if he makes these requests, we eliminate him from consideration for leading the davening. Okay, the next clause in the Mishnah says, Ha'uset tfilato agula, what if a person makes his tefillin, so here tfilato means his tefillin, agula, round. So instead of wearing, as you know, we have square tefillin, he wants to wear round tefillin. Now there is a question here that we have to deal with, which is it is clear, not, we'll mention it in a moment, but in the Gemara, but it's clear from other Gemaras in Menachot, that tefillin are required to be square. It's a halacha l'moshe misinai, that tefillin be square. So how could we even have such a hava mina that one would wear a round tefillin? But perhaps there were, at some point in history, round tefillin. And here, even though it's true that you can't have round tefillin, the Mishnah has a particular problem with it, which is that it's a sakana, it's dangerous. V'ein ba mitzvah, and it's not the proper mitzvah. What's dangerous about these round tefillin is that you could bang your head, they're round in a way that they are like a peg, and you could bang your head on the wall or bend over and bang them into a bench, and the tefillin could go into your head or cause a brain damage. So we wanted them to be safe. So we're saying, particularly introducing it here, to teach that these round tefillin are dangerous. Natna al mitzcho, if he put the tefillin on his forehead, so to speak, in between his eyes, o al pasiado, or on his palms, hare zu derech minut. This is a heretical way of wearing tefillin. What's heretical about it is that he's trying to follow the Karaite version of understanding the text. In other words, he reads the Torah and it says, Ukshartem lo tayadecha, you should bind the tefillin on your hands. So he puts them on his palms, on his hands. And then it says, Vayulato tefot beninecha, and they should be for frontlets between your eyes. So instead of putting them where we do, above your eyes, at your hairline, he puts them on his forehead in between his eyes because he's going based according to how he thinks he should read the text in a sola scriptura way. But since he's doing that, it means that he doesn't trust the rabbis and he doesn't accept the rabbinic interpretation of the Torah, and that is derech minut. There's a poster that I saw somewhere that had all the wrong ways to put on tefillin, you know, on the back of your head, and on your ear, on your palm. So these are all the wrong ways to put on tefillin. You don't put them on your hands and you don't put them on your forehead. You put them on your bicep and at your hairline the way the rabbi said you should. Finally, another way to do tefillin incorrectly, tzipan zahav, if he coated his tefillin in gold, v'natna al beit unkli, or he put them over his clothing, unkli shelo, over his tunic, harei ze der chitzonim, this is the way of people who don't belong to the Jewish community, of outsiders. So you could understand why a person might want to do this, cover their tefillin in gold, because it makes them very beautiful and sparkly. They're very lovely tefillin that way. And I could understand why you'd put them on the outside of your clothes so that everyone can see that you're wearing tefillin. But this violates, as Rashi points out, the rabbinic interpretation of tefillin as well, because the problem with putting gold on them is that tefillin are only supposed to have on them things that come from a kosher animal, and gold is not one of those things. And you're not supposed to put them outside of your clothes, because we learn, especially related to the arm tefillin, that when it says in the Torah, "V'hayu le'ot al yadecha," that it's a sign, that the sign is meant for you privately, and not for us. Lecha is the oat, and not la'acherim. You're not trying to show off your arm tefillin to other people. They're for you. That's why we put them on the inside of our arm, and many people even cover them with their shirts or with their jackets, because the sign of the arm tefillin is for you, and if you wear them outside your clothing, you're showing that you think it's a sign for others. So both of these examples, using materials that don't come from a kosher animal and displaying it as a public sign, both of those are signs that you are either ignorant of or are going against the interpretation of the rabbis about what the meaning of tefillin is. So all of these examples in our Mishnah are examples of people who are bringing foreign values into the service and rejecting what Chazal say. The Gemara continues, my taima, and it's going to repeat what we said. What's the reason why we don't let this person lead the davening? Chayshin and Shema minut nizrika bo. We are concerned that he is some kind of a heretic or schismatic, a person who is broken off from the community. Ha'oset tfilato agula sakana v'ein ba mitzvah. When we say that a person makes their tefillin round, that it's dangerous. Lema tanina. Perhaps you could say that we learned this already. Laha detanu rabbanan, as we learned, the rabbis taught us, tefillin merubaot halacha l'moshe misinai, as I mentioned, that we have a law passed down to Moses from Sinai, that tefillin have to be round. Sorry, not round, that have to be square. V'amar Rava, and Rava explains, b'tafran uva alachsonan, there are specific measurements. You have to know the Pythagorean theorem. You have to know exactly how long each side is and how much the diagonal across the square, if you divide the square into two triangles, how long the diagonal across the square is. These have exact measurements from Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, and Rashi brings the measurements. So Rav Papa explains, Amar Rav Papa Matnitin Ar Mishnah Da'avida Ki Amaguza, is not really referring to round tefillin, but it says the avida, he made them ki amaguza, like an egos, like some kind of a walnut, or an almond shape. So it's not really round, it's kind of spherical, and maybe it's not even completely spherical, maybe it's more like trapezoidal, it's somewhere in between a circle and a square, so maybe you could argue that it doesn't apply, or that it's still within the parameters of square tefillin, and it's only if it is in this sort of like roundish, squarish shape, but obviously anything that's perfectly round would not be allowed. It's kind of a strange solution to the problem, because we are so specific that even if your corner of your tefillin get dented, you know, you have to straighten them out and make sure that they're square all the time. That is Rav Papa's solution to the contradiction, that some things that are square-ish, you might have thought anyway that square-ish was good enough. We'll stop there at the very bottom of the Amud. Have a wonderful day.